to ease us in, Jack, I've always wondered, your name is Jack Daniels. Do people give you a lot of guff, a lot of crap over that? Or
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's
do you enjoy
I have
the drink that you share a name with?
No. Not at all. It's pretty terrible, actually. My parents played a pretty sick joke on me when I was very young, when they were naming me, funnily enough, and I'm now called Jack Daniels. The funny thing about that, actually, is it's played to my benefit a few times in my life.
Okay.
Job interviews, they tend to remember my name.
Mm.
But then if I do something bad, they also tend to remember my name. It's win-lose, never win-win. Particularly, there was actually a crazy circumstance. I was at a job agency, sat next to this guy. I didn't speak to him at all. I didn't know who he was. And the person who worked for the job agency came out and said, Jack Daniels, and we both stood up. I looked at him. I said, no way. And he said, your name's Jack Daniels. I said, yeah, my name's Jack Daniels. I hugged him. I just had to. I'm never gonna have this opportunity again.
Yeah,
it was just at that point my life could have been over, but I'm still here.
So did you rock paper scissors to see who would win in first?
So it was actually him, unfortunately. But just I could have left and had as good an experience.
That
never happened again, and it never will happen again. I'm certain of it.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Hello and welcome back to Lather Talk. I'm your host John, aka Lather Hog, and with me, as always, is my co-host Gerard, aka Hey Gerard Shaves.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
And on today's episode, we have a very special guest. We've been talking about doing this for quite a while, and finally able to get our schedules lined up. It is none other than Jack. You might know him from his YouTube channel, The Virtual Groom Room, or other various content that he has created. He is very prolific. Jack, thank you for coming on to Lather Talk, and welcome.
That was quite the intro. I've never been called prolific before, but I'll take it. Absolutely take it. Thank you for having me, guys.
You make lots of content.
I used to make loads, but now I've kind of like toned that back a bit. But we'll go with prolific.
So Jack, you know, off the top, we mentioned the YouTube channel. When did you start your YouTube channel, and how did you get started in the whole thing?
So it's funny because I was wet shaving for a little bit of time before I started the channel. I'd done it on and off for a couple of years prior to starting the YouTube channel, and frankly wasn't paying much attention to what I was doing. I'd shave with the double-edged razor and then shave with a cartridge razor sometimes. And I'd switch in between. And until I got kind of somewhat proficient with the double-edged razor, did I only then realize how little I enjoyed that cartridge experience. I then started a YouTube channel in 2018. It must have been, I think it was June of 2018. Mm. And at that time, like, I was somewhat proficient in just the technique required to do it. And so the YouTube channel started in June 2018, and then I've been doing it on and off really for a year or two before.
Got it. And was there a catalyst or something that sparked going from, okay, you know, you're into traditional or wet shaving to, I guess you said you dabbled in YouTube first,
yeah.
But at some point, you know, it became a very regular, very focused endeavor. Did something happen to kind of make that change?
It was more of a gradual thing, I think. It was more of the case that this is something I enjoy doing. It was very much the case of finding what worked for me at first, because I personally feel I don't have the personality to just stand there and talk to the camera. There are lots of people that do that really well, like Kevy Shaves does that very well, Paul H does that very well, Ken Surfs does that very well. I don't have the ability to just stand there and not talk about much for 20-30 minutes. As far as kind of like what I'm actually doing and shaving, they have the ability to just talk about their lives and people love that, but I couldn't really do that. So it was about finding what worked for me. And it was mainly like the nerdiness of shaving is really what worked for me. Like explaining how I do things. I've always been quite good at kind of articulating like the methodology behind stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's something that definitely worked for me. And I to be honest, I still do that now. Every video, I pretty much talk through the same lathering technique I do for 10 minutes a video. And I have people still every video saying that was helpful. So I'm going to continue doing that until no one finds it helpful anymore. But yeah, it was about finding kind of what worked for me. And as soon as I found that, and I started getting a lot more interaction, because when I started, there was really little interaction. Like now there's like a core of like solid viewers. Back mm-hmm. then, really the only people that were viewing like YouTube shaving videos were on the larger channels like Michael Friedberg, as I said, Ken Surfs, Kevy Shaves. Probably the first half a year to a year, I was having very little interaction on my videos, and it was mainly just making them because it's something I wanted to do. But then as soon as I started getting the bounce back from the community, I really enjoyed that, and that spurred me on to do more. Frankly, I think a lot of my audience now is due to the fact that I've spent stupid amounts of money on the hobby and they see me spend stupid amounts of money and they're like, this is interesting. I wonder how he's going to find that stuff.
We can't really relate to you in that regards either.
I'm not surprised, man. Like, it's pretty crazy.
I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, then you're probably one of us. Yes. Yeah. Or you want to be.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
If you're listening to this podcast, there's a chance that you have bought or you're about to buy some piece of $100 shaving gear. Like you've hit that threshold. You're going to spend $100 on a razor, on a brush or something.
Now, if that is the case, what razors should they buy? That's the question.
Brilliant. Brilliant question. I say the Rockwell 6S.
I would say the Carve, but I'm not paid to do that anymore. So I would say the Rockwell 6C, because I think that's the best value for money.
Okay.
Although you can't go wrong with the Carve.
I was trying to spend all the money in this scenario.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, $100, like on the button. Yeah, I mean, I would normally say like Rockwell, if you could like find the plate that you want, you know, you're
for
good.
Sure, yeah.
I'd also put Game Changer 0.84.
Oh yeah. Yes, that has to be the
I haven't used the new Lupo, but you know, but yep. John loaned me his 0.84. I mean, I'm just like, this thing's a steal, you know, for
it's crazy, bucks. Isn't it? Like how the face feel is that of high end razors. It's an absolute bargain for what you're getting is the package. To be honest, they've consistently done that for the last few years, just make incredibly good products at almost unbeatable prices.
Yep.
So yeah, the Game Changer has to be there. For me, it goes in no particular order. Game Changer, the Rockwell, kind of any of them really. Mm-hmm. They're all fittable and they're Carve brass. I think the stainless is probably a bit too expensive. And then you have like loads of what I would describe as kind of like larger mass scale razors that also do the job. But then you could also go to places like Maggard's or West Coast Shaving and pick up razors there that are perfectly good and will last you a really long time for a fraction of the price of pretty much all the ones we just mentioned. So
I would still, you know, I'd even tell people like 34C is still a great razor. It shaves really well.
It's not the hipster razor though, is it?
No.
Yeah.
But you won't get hate on it. I don't you like won't. If you're hating the 34C, then like you really are just like
you're like the shittiest shaving purist ever. Yeah. If you hate on the 34C,
yeah.
You hate shaving and everything it represents because everyone started with this thing. Well, half people started with a D89 and half the people started with the 34C.
Yep.
Are there rivalries within those two groups? Or does everyone just think, no, you started with a good razor, but mine's better sort of thing? Who knows, right?
I don't think there's a rivalry. At least I would check the forums. That's where something like that would happen.
Yeah, those forums. That's
and that, if there was a rivalry, it's been killed by whatever's the latest, you know, Instagram social media razor out right now, right?
yeah, that's probably right.
That is where things have evolved. That is true. You mentioned, you know what? Actually, I really liked how you characterized your approach. Maybe because I really jive, and that's kind of how I approach my own stuff. Is where, to keep focused, there's something we're going to talk about. Most likely, it's going to be a product, a razor, a brush, a soap, or some combination of that, right? And that's kind of where I lead, because how, I don't know if you were this way, Jack, and I'd love to hear how it was, but your viewing habits, right? Once you start making content, you really have to be choosy, because you just don't have time to be watching everything necessarily. I know some people who watch shaving YouTube are really great, really committed to it. And, you know, God bless you guys, because you are what keeps the content creators going. But just the way I always viewed stuff was like, if I'm researching a purchase, whether that is the $100 razor we're just talking about, or some other thing, I do research, like, you know, just like I do with any technology or even a video game. I was like, okay, let's, you know, these two or three people, I really respect their opinions. Let me check them out. Does that kind of describe how you engage with YouTube on when you're a viewer, or is there some other model that you would characterize your viewing habits?
So it's difficult because, like, when it comes to, like, let's say for example, more recently I bought that titanium blackbird. I have friends that I trust their opinions. I'll reach out to them first. If they don't have anything definitive, I will kind of outsource that. As far as kind of like my viewing habits, most of it is kind of like the more laid back content, to be honest with you, like not the hyper focused product driven content.
Okay.
Because I've almost formed my own opinions on what I like and what I want to use. I don't need to watch reviews for me to understand, is this for me or is this not for me? Mm. Most of my viewing really are people kind of, as I alluded to earlier, that can just talk about their life for a while. And I then gravitate onto a personality or something. It's funny because you wouldn't generally assume that with the personality I have. But as far as like product reviews go, I just don't use it for that. To be honest, I don't think I've ever used it for that.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. I think there's a lot of, in the shaving space at least, right? I think overwhelming majority, it is personality driven. So you
for
definitely,
sure.
You definitely, you know what I mean? Like you have so many choices. If that's the, that's the angle that you're taking.
Yeah. I mean, as far as kind of like the bigger channels, I'd say they're kind of more focused around that. Mm. There are channels like my personal favorite YouTube channel. And if he does listen to this, I'm probably going to grow his head a little bit. It's Michael Friedberg. He was one of the first guys I started watching.
Yeah.
And it was his incredibly dry dad humor mixed with just an idea on how to articulate things that really got me into the idea of making videos, because he's having the time of his life doing what he's doing. I want to do that too. And, that's where you get a bit of both, like the degree of personality and then the kind of a lot of the product focus driven stuff. Like near the end, well, not really near the end. I think he was doing that kind of like weekly cycle of products that I think can become a bit arduous for the most part. But ultimately, he was a good balance of the two. But then I think you get the other end of the spectrum, like Ken Surfs. He could use anything and he'd get 10,000 views a video because he spoke about a pinball machine and people love it. If that's your jam and that's what works for you, you latch onto that and you make content focused around that, because if people are responding well to it, play on it. Like it's really not a problem. And I think the way I'd say it's like kind of product focused, then you get Rudds. Like Rudds is so product focused. Like he's one end of the spectrum.
Yes.
Where I'd say you, John, have a balance, a little bit of a balance as well, not like 100% product focused, but predominantly product focused.
Yeah,
it's an interesting balance, I think, and I think once people find kind of what's worked for them, that you then see kind of a channel lift off typically.
I guess kind of piggybacking off of that, Jack, what piece of advice would you give someone who's thinking about starting their own YouTube channel in the shaving space?
Spend as much money as you can. It helps. I'm joking, obviously. I'm joking, obviously. Ultimately, at first, I highly recommend you make the videos you want to make, because if you start buying stuff to make videos, that becomes a problem really quickly. And I think we'll probably go on that a bit later. Ultimately, just enjoy the videos you make, and the people that are supposed to find you will find you. I'm really of that opinion, because we have a really small community here. It's a niche community to where there aren't loads of people. Like, this isn't FragCon, which is much larger than here. You're going to get found by the people that need to find you. So just do what you enjoy and go from there. And I know that might be a fence-sitting answer, because it's not a definitive way to do something, but really it is the best way, because if you start doing things modeling after someone else, and that might not quite fit the personality you have or the approach you want to sustain, I think it will just get stale eventually. And ultimately, I think you should be making the videos you want to make, and that lends itself to the sustainability aspect as well.
I would add on to your first answer about buying as much product as you can. But if you can't buy, borrow.
For because sure.
Like you said, this community is so small enough, and you know, people are more than generous enough to just like loan you something, you know.
Yeah.
As long as you're not like a total, you know, douchebag about stuff.
I found the same thing as well. You're right.
So, and that can get you off, you know, squared away right away. Like some people can't, you know, don't want to drop $100 on every razor or everything that happens. So pass arounds are good. Making friends is good. And
but then again, I'd also argue, even if you don't want to spend that money, that utilitarian shaver, there's still a place for you as well, because there's lots of us that are crazy in like the hobbyist space. There are some guys that dabble in kind of like the more utilitarian stuff, but ultimately I think if you do that well, you have even larger mass appeal, because most of the artisan stuff is solely focused around the US and certain parts of Europe. If you can use products that are accessible to the rest of the world, you're providing a lot of value, especially if you're explaining how you got them, the price. That would appeal to more people than using a $40 soap, in my opinion.
There are a couple of people that come to mind in terms of like, and you're right, like people like I think Ken has over 10,000 subscribers now. Paul H and Kevy are around there too. But I've talked about this with John and other YouTubers, specifically like international ones. Do you know who Luca is? Luca Denaro? He's an Italian wet shaver.
I do, yeah.
His channel's completely in Italian, but he has like 30,000 subscribers.
That's damn cool.
Right? And then there's another person, I forgot his name off the top of my head. Maybe we'll add it later. And I don't particularly see him involved in the community, but he'll buy like off-the-shelf stuff like the King C. Gillette that was in the drugstores and other things. And he has like, again, like maybe 50,000 subscribers with just general products.
That is to say that I think it's unarguably those are the products that are most accessible to people.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the layperson, and I use layperson in the sense that they're not ultimately part of the niche community or the like hobbyist community.
Right.
They see those products and they wonder what they are, right? And that could be the gateway to getting them into a community like ours. So really, there's no discrimination of gear from my perspective. I think everything has a place.
Definitely, for sure.
So you've already alluded to a little bit about kind of like how acquisition of gear, especially as a content creator, it can snowball out of control. Now, you've been making videos since 2018, very steadily, and I know that a few months ago, you did a very big purge of your collection. Yes. And I'm just wondering if you can walk us to, and you've, for those who subscribe and follow your content, probably know a little bit of the story already, but for those, if might be the first time hearing, can you kind of just bring us through the point where you realized, okay, something's got to change as far as like the whole acquisition thing. And then I'd also love to hear how that process was, like the difficulties of it, or maybe it was really easy, whatever the case may be, of thinning out a very full collection.
So that, I think that's a really good question, because I wasn't really thinking about it at first, kind of as I was amassing all of this stuff. It was, mm-hmm. This is great. I'll use it once and I'll put it aside. And I'll touch on that a little bit later. It happened again and again and again and again until I had about 140 soaps and I was moving. And that's really when you understand how much stuff you have when you're moving, because it can't just stay there. You need to pack it up, right? So I was packing this stuff up and I looked at these two huge Costco boxes and I said, why? Like, really, how many times have I used most of this stuff? It was pretty much, unless it was things that I really like, mm-hmm. it was pretty much one use and done. Some of the stuff that was there, I hadn't even used. And I'm serious. I was talking like 20 soaps I hadn't used. And I was looking at it and I was like, something needs to change, but I need to move. I'll deal with that. I then took a little bit of break from making videos. So I didn't really need to ultimately focus on that new stuff so much. And then I was using things kind of while I wasn't making the videos that I knew I enjoy. I then started making videos again slowly. And then I realized I should get rid of some of this. And then it came to the point with, okay, so what scale do I want to start getting rid of this? Because really, if I was being sensible, I'd leave myself with very few items, because in my brain, if I need to consider, would I be willing to use this every day and only this for me to keep it? And that made me make some, what I defined as some really tough decisions, because I ended up getting rid of stuff that was either really rare, that I had gotten because it was rare and it looked good for a video and ultimately was a complete waste of money from my perspective, or it was good when I first used it, but it wasn't something that I'd ultimately want to use every day. So then I got rid of probably about 110 soaps. Oof. Which is a lot. Yeah. And I then decided to, okay, so what soaps do I want to keep? To be honest, I got rid of some stuff that I would say I love, but I don't love enough to keep around. And I was there then with about 15 soaps. I actually have more now. You can see kind of that behind me.
Yeah.
That's small compared to what I had before.
Is that like your collection currently in its entirety?
Yeah. Okay. That's the entire collection there. So
bravo. Bravo, man.
So from 110 down to that. And now I have a rule that if I buy anything new, I have to get rid of something. So then I got rid of everything, and then it was, I only have 10 soaps, like, and then it was focusing on what I enjoy most about wet shaving. Ultimately, it was variety, because I was shaving with the same thing all the time. And it was like, I love this thing a lot, but there were also loads of other things I love, but I need to be smart about how I buy things again. So I don't impulse buy at all anymore. If I have the idea of I want to buy something, I will sit on it for a week before I purchase it, pretty much. And it might sell out, it might not, but that's kind of how I'm trying to approach it. I'm trying to give it some time, because before long, that's the same problem. And I don't really want to have to deal with that again, because honestly, there's so many choices in this hobby now, as far as like soaps, razors, brushes. And like, I wasn't buying kind of like mid-range to low-range to top-range. Pretty much everything I was buying was really expensive. And in my head, I saw everything there as what that money could have been. I could have put a down payment on a car with that money. Oh, like, I'm not even exaggerating, dude. Like, I got rid of straight razors that amassed to about $4,000. The soaps made an additional maybe $1,500. Mm-hmm. So I put in serious money, and I wasn't really getting anything out of it because nothing was getting use. Mm-hmm. So then it was the case of scaling everything down and really focusing on what I want. And I think I have that now. I am probably going to get rid of some more stuff. Another benefit of being a kind of like a wet shaving YouTuber is I don't always have to pay for stuff I get. So people send me stuff to review or what's your impressions on this. The way I'm going to approach that now is I'm just going to give that stuff away because I just don't want it sitting around because then the problem happens again. Because even if I didn't pay for it, it's still there not being used when someone else could use that. Same for razors. Like I had multiple expensive rare razors that weren't really getting some use. When if I put it into perspective, I probably use 3 or 4 razors and that's it. Straights, like I said, were the same thing. So it was really about narrowing down quite what I wanted to get from it and then start to gradually build a smaller collection again. Mm-hmm. Because I really started from scratch. Like I maybe had 10 unscented soaps of bases. Wow. That I really like.
Yeah.
And then it was, okay, let's start adding a bit more variety in here, but it needs to be things that I would consider using every day. And pretty much everything I have now is I would consider using every day.
Wow. Do you have a number in mind as far as a cap, or because I think the whole like if one comes in, one's gotta leave, or you know, whatever the case, whatever order that happens. Yeah. In is a really good rule to have in place. But then you mentioned rebuilding, so like you have some headroom in, you know. Yeah. and especially compared to 150, this is like very lean and mean. But do you still have like a cap of like 50 or anything like that, or is there a flexibility in that?
So it depends, because I feel for my personality, if there's flexibility, I will still go overboard. That's just the personality I have. So I need to have something rigid. And for me, my rigid is about 40.
Okay.
I have quite a lot of older stuff, like stuff that I bought at the start that I hadn't got rid of, because frankly, the resale value is not loads of money. And it holds a degree of sentimental value for me. So I don't really want to get rid of that. So I don't really add that onto it. But I will flutter around that 40 point. And if it goes over 40, I will get rid of something.
Mm.
It's hard because you're then like juggling. Yeah. Okay, I like all of this stuff, but do I like that thing I'm bringing in so much that I'm willing to get rid of this? I don't know. And it's a good question to ask yourself when you don't want to go overboard, because the idea of having to get rid of something to attain something can be quite difficult, and you might just not want to face it to begin with.
Yeah.
So if you know what I mean.
I mean, I think that approach also just disciplines you already, because like you said,
for sure,
if you don't do that, then you're going to end up with another 140 soaps all over again.
And it will happen.
Yeah.
And it can happen pretty quick. Like, I remember when I first started, sorry to interrupt you there, Gerard, but when I first started, I had that cap. I had that cap, and it slowly transpired to that cap getting bigger and bigger until the cap was only really a soft cap and it didn't really exist anymore. So you've got to make tough decisions. And to someone not in the hobby that don't hold these things in high regard, tough decisions of not using soap sounds absolutely bananas. But if it gives you a feeling when you're using it or you enjoy using that product, getting rid of it could suck. And I got rid of some stuff that I really enjoyed because I didn't love it, if you get what I mean. And mm-hmm. I agree with your point there. It's it can get overboard real quick.
And I say that because as someone, you know, with what I would classify as an addictive personality, I mean, just especially if it's, you know, if you're able to get it, you just think it's like a harmless thing, right? You know, you get it here and there, and all of a sudden, you have 150 you know, soaps. And so, I know half of our listeners are probably like, oh my God, that's so much. And other people are just like 150 amateur, you know,
probably.
And,
yeah.
And, but yeah, like otherwise, what is the cap? What's, you know, what's the real limit to what you're just, otherwise you're just a hoarder, you know? Right.
To a degree, yeah, because I think if you're not using that stuff, it's just there. It's just collecting dust. And you buy soap really to use it. It's not the sort of thing that you can sit there in ages like wine. Like if you're not using it, it's pretty useless.
Just
cut it loose, in my opinion. That's kind of where I've landed to anyway.
Yeah, and I probably want to get there. I'm not at a, I don't have 100. Like I probably in my history have, you know, had at least that or whatever. I probably have about 70 or 80 at the moment. But I think like every 3 months, every 6 months, I kind of just like go through, just like look at everything. I'm like, if I have not touched this in 6 months, it should go on the chopping block.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's sensible.
Yeah. And there are a few where I've kept just because like of some maybe like faux sentimental, you know, reason and stuff like that. But for the most part, yeah. And it also reminds me that I'm due to do that again soon. but yeah, like every 3 months, 6 months, you know, just kind of take a look. If you literally have not used it, you're just like, oh, I forgot I had this in the first place. Yeah, probably should, you know, just put it up.
Yeah.
Put it up for sale or whatever, you know, give it to someone that'll use it.
And someone will take it off of you. I found that. Like, even if you're not selling something that's described as like unobtainium or rare, people will buy it because they see it come up and they're like, oh, this is interesting. I want that. But most of us share that trait.
Yeah. And, people, and especially if you say stuff like, oh, free shipping, sale, buy, you know, buy two, get free shipping or whatever. Those
buzzwords.
That's it. I mean, I can safely say I primarily sell my stuff on Reddit. And, you know, like I'll put like maybe 10 items or so per time. But I would say that everything's gone within 36 hours.
Yeah. It's like, pretty normal.
Yeah. So it's not bad, you know, and it also goes to show that, you know, like we're not getting crap either, you know, like we're getting
sure.
that is also enjoyable.
But I mean, in the hobbyist community, in theory, we're using products made by the people that are truly passionate about what we're using. Mm-hmm. So in theory, everything in that regard should be pretty darn good. And the hobbyists around this community have an investment in the artisans that are making stuff. So typically people just want to use as much as they can, unless they've been around for a while and they know truly what they like. And then people will be a bit more considered with the purchases they make. But that's been my experience anyway, for sure.
I feel like more stuff has been released during COVID than like I remember before. Like I feel like you would hear like a few announcements here and there, but I just feel like people were just dropping stuff left and right, you know, and if someone dropped something, like the next week someone else was dropping something else new. And it was just and maybe it's also because of more time spent at home, there was probably more attention on us to like, you know, just notice those things. But yeah, I feel like there was definitely no shortage in 2020 and stuff out there, stuff offered for any wet shaver or person in, you know, in this hobby.
There's such variety, but then what I would also say is there's so much variety that you can really narrow down what you like as well.
Oh yeah.
There's something for everyone. And if whatever you have isn't working for you, move on. Find what you like and stick to it is my advice at this point.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I mean, I do love talking shop, and especially this hobbyist, like kind of how to be responsible and whatnot. But I think we'd be missing out a lot where another aspect of kind of your background and how it ties into the community, and that is your time of employment with Carr Razor Company. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that. I know you're no longer with Carr currently, but if you can just talk a little bit when you were on board, kind of a little bit of your responsibilities, and then where you've moved on since then.
So that's a good question. I think it's probably better to address kind of why I was put in that position to begin with.
Sure.
Prior to working for Carve, I was one of my first kind of like professional jobs was in a machining shop, which lends itself very, very much to what Carve does. The company itself manufactured motorcycle parts, and the motorcycle parts were pretty high grade. Like they'd be made out of really high quality stainless steel and titanium and stuff like that. And before long, I was selling that product to race teams, MotoGP, motocross, stuff like that. And I had kind of developed the company I was in to a decent degree, like in terms of the wholesale customer base and stuff like that. And the company's still going around now. They're doing really well. I then left that and kind of fast forward in time, like lots of IT positions. So if you think about that job, that's from its infancy, is pretty much exactly where Carve was when I joined. Mm. A very young company solely based around the product they make. I joined with the idea of doing a pretty similar thing. It was my job ultimately to help Chris develop product because I have an understanding of machining. I have an understanding of what you use for certain metals and why. So I could, in theory, help him produce that. I also have experience with using a hell of a lot of stuff in this industry, and that also gives quite a lot of perspective as well. Ultimately, my job would have been, given everything worked out how it was supposed to, communicating with wholesalers, landing wholesale accounts, selling to wholesale accounts, frankly, being, I guess, customer outreach. If you sent an email to Carve over the past, you know, year and a half and a bit before September, I would have been the guy answering you. And just kind of, I guess, more of a face of the company, because where Chris was there, Chris was very much in the background and kind of did his own stuff. And there was no one saying, hey, guys, we're still here, ever. Like, it was always very quiet, and like he always just got on with what he needed to do. And when I was brought on, there was an opportunity for me to say, hey, Carve is a big mainstay of this community. And I guess that was the ultimate goal, really. That's kind of how my previous employment lended to what I was supposed to be doing at Carve, or kind of like the ultimate ideal situation at Carve. It didn't quite pan out like that. And that's why we're kind of no longer together, so to speak. But the feeling, I love that company. I love the product they make. I love the owner of the company. He's one of the most, he's the perfect balance of really caring about what he's doing and just a good guy. That he's one of, for me, the bosses I've had that I like the most. It's not even a competition. It just didn't work out, and that's unfortunate, but I move on, and I've moved on, and arguably I've landed in a good position pretty much, but no ill feelings towards Carve whatsoever. I still think they make the best safety razor, if that helps. My opinion hasn't changed.
Well, that's great. I mean, how often, right, do people who are hobbyists, just enthusiasts of wood shaving, and that's definitely a surprise to hear that you had some of, you know, with that with that earlier job, how the machining worked right just, in, worked right into that.
It worked so well, yeah. Because in theory, if Carve was at its point ready to expand, it would have lended itself at, like, perfectly. Mm. Because at that point, I had been in the community long enough to know people, to know the different wholesalers, to kind of to know where to move the product. I mean, it's important to remember, like, even within my first couple of months with Carve, mm-hmm. in theory, I got that product into all of the world's continents. That was my aim, was to really grow the brand.
Yeah.
There are a few reasons why that couldn't happen, and I completely understand why. And I know that they're doing much better now with the reasons what they were struggling with at the time.
Mm.
But it made sense. And to me, in my head, it still makes sense if the company was ready to grow. But growing pains proved to be a big problem, ultimately, and it just didn't work out because of that.
Right,
and it was
right.
such a unique opportunity, as you said, like a hobbyist to get like a decently well-paying job. And I think a lot of people kind of on the inside that didn't know about the previous background probably looked at me and said, you bastard. Like, you land that job in this industry. I can see you. You're not doing very much. You lucky so-and-so. You don't deserve it. I heard it. But a lot of people said it to me, and fair enough. You're obviously entitled to your opinion, but ultimately, you would take that job if it was given to you too. That's what I'm going to say.
Like, I was always hovering around the hobby. So when I jumped into it, I think you're already there. So I didn't really have any of those like premonitions. I just thought you were the Carve guy, you know,
which was the intention, to be honest. Right.
Yeah.
But, I get why, and you can include this if you want. I don't really care what people think of me too much, but a lot of people have preconceived notions that, you know, you're lucky you landed that. I landed that for a sole reason. Like, I met Chris, I had a good conversation with Chris. I spoke to Chris a lot before landing that position. Mm. I made forecasts of where the company could go and where I think it could go, providing everything goes well. And, there were just things in the way that didn't work. And that happens sometimes. It's like I said, there's no ill will towards him. And I kind of get it. Like, from the outside, seeing someone, and especially in such a small industry, land a job like that when I'm in a completely different geographical location to where that company is, probably seems a bit mental, frankly.
I mean, people didn't... I can't speak for people, right? But... I don't know. It's not like you owe those people an answer, you know, like, no. You know, like anything like that. I think maybe people, because I didn't really know. Yeah, it's not like, were you the you know, chief of operations? You know, like there was
for the most
like,
part.
Right. Like, but was there like how people have definitive titles? I think people just didn't know that. Right. Like, or, you know, and. That was always my perspective of it, you know, just,
yeah.
You know, just from like hearing stuff, it's just like, what does Jack do for that? Like, you know, like yeah. a lot, obviously, you know, at the, you know, even under, you know, beneath, you know, behind the curtain and whatnot. But I also think, like I said, you know, I think that's also a, just something within the hobby, right?
For sure. I think,
and we'll all answer, you know, we can all, you know this, that it is so easy to literally, you know, engage in any conversation with the artisan themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
Whether it is, you could just be a small, to me, mom and pop shop, or in some cases, the quote unquote CEOs of the company, the founders, if you will. And like, what other hobby can you say you have that kind of access so quickly and easily, you know, for people?
I can't think of one.
No, you can't. Yeah, like
no.
And like, there might be some really small niche hobbies where it's like that, maybe. But I think with that kind of accessibility, you know. for a lot of people. Sometimes maybe they just expect it, like, in other facets, you know.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether they understand that or not.
And I think it's fair for people to kind of, how did he go from there to there? It makes a lot of sense to me. But yeah, that's kind of how it happened anyway. It was fun while I was there. It really gave me a greater insight as to how the business side of the community works. And I think it ultimately has made me a better content creator as well.
Mm.
Because I can almost, if there isn't something I like, kind of like on the production side of something, there's part of me that can kind of draw back from that experience and kind of understand why that could be the case. But I wouldn't have changed accepting the job. I wish it worked out because I love that company still, honestly. But ultimately, everything happens for a reason, I think. And we're both where we are at this point.
I know we've been talking for a while now, Jack, and kind of as we're winding things down, I would love to hear what is one prediction that you have for the coming year in wet shaving? We'll just leave it wide open, whether it's a broad prediction, a very, very specific one. It can do with hardware, software, artists, I it's an open book. I'd love to hear a prediction, and I'll give you a little bit of time to think about that too, since I'm kind of just springing that on you.
Well, here's a prediction. I think we're going to see a lot more kind of collaborations from people not directly involved in our hobby. We saw it a bit this year. Zaharoff did a collaboration with Gentleman's Nod. And as you alluded to me earlier, Imaginary Authors, Noble Otter. I think we're going to start seeing that quite a lot more. I mean, it makes sense that you get experts in scent making sense for things that are supposed to be scented. It just makes sense.
Less sense.
Yeah. So ultimately, I think that will happen a lot. I also think soap bases ultimately have only really scratched the surface of the ingredients that can be put inside of them. Some artisans have started exploring like really high quality skincare ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
It's not been used quite as much as you would expect, considering the cost of soap now. Soap can be a lot more expensive because it can contain quite a lot more, I guess, exotic skincare ingredients. We're going to see a lot more of that as artisans try and outdo themselves with different bases.
Yeah.
And Rudd starts to dictate the market again. So that's a compliment to Rudd, by the way. He absolutely does that. I'm certain of it. Like, if he gets sent a soap and it gets a really high shave score, loads of people are buying that soap.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure of it. Because yeah, for people, sure. I imagine some people that are almost like, I want to get the latest and greatest of X, almost rely on that shave score, or that massively influences their decision. So you're going to see a lot of advancements, or at least additions to soap bases being kind of like exotic ingredients and stuff like that. Like I said, I only think we've really only scratched the surface of that. And the bigger collaborations with kind of like indie fragrance houses. I'd love a Slumber House collab. I really would. But, you know, fragrances are quite expensive.
Yeah.
So just someone do it and I'll buy it from you. Okay. I promise. But I'd love to see that. It's exciting, really. I think there's loads of things that could happen over the next year. I guess it remains to be seen what does happen, especially given the difficult business operating space at the moment. Like, we've seen a lot of companies like switch towards bombs as alcohol and stuff has been difficult to get a hold of. Like, Barrister and Anne is one that ultimately comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And their bomb is fantastic, by the way. You've probably used it, right?
Oh, it's great, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to see. Yeah, have you used it?
Okay.
Oh, you've got it there. Okay.
Ooh, that's a good one.
But yeah, like there's lots of room for product development, and I'm very excited to see what happens over the next year. But it's important to not buy everything, and I need to remind myself of that.
Like, those are very good predictions. One that is very challenging to your current, I think, very good, like, controlled version of your shave then. But I think very, very solid predictions, Jack. But
do you guys have any?
I think, you know, it's not, I don't, it goes along this kind of the same lines, but I think just men's grooming in general is just, maybe within the hobby, it's growing, but I think even in just the regular market, in your stores, like your beauty supply stores, the men's section is not going away, and it's not getting any smaller. You know,
that's such a valid point. I think kind of touching on that, something I discussed kind of on the other podcast I was on a lot was making these artisan grade. This is a whole other section. I'm sorry if you're going to edit this in, but it's making these artisan grade products consumable for the everyday person. That loads of things is involved in that. You know, it's making them more usable. It's to some degree could be making the scents less complex. That would be digestible, palatable for everyone.
Yeah.
And ultimately it would be understanding kind of like the operational side of getting it to all of these places. I think that's when you really see the kind of explosion of the hobbyist side of stuff, because we're yet to see how that works. That's how you take the step, one more step ahead, you know, is finding a way to supply everyone with your soap, not quite just the hobbyist. It'd be interesting to see how that transpires. I hope it does as well.
I mean, to scale it to that kind of size, I mean, I would hope that nothing is sacrificed, but I feel like something has to be just to make it easier, for the artisan slash, you know, business owner, to begin with. But yeah, I mean, and I feel as hobbyists, we're always like, we're like the first people in line, you know, for the new iPhone. We're the ones, you know, literally kind of going through the ringer, you know, we buy it first. We're the ones like saying, oh, this is what's good about it. This is, you know, what's the same or whatnot. And then, you know, I think that just our use, and I don't want to say expertise, but just the role of the, you know, the first buyers, the people in, you know, in that are willing to wait in line for those items, that are have their phones, you know, alarm set for when a drop happens, you know, that 9 o'clock, you know, whatever it is, midnight Easter or noon Eastern, when something's going to happen. I think ultimately, yeah, it can grow the hobby, because we're going to direct where it goes more than anything.
I think so. I think, like I alluded to just now, I think a big part of it is making it more usable for everyone, because, and that's also like, there's definitely the hobbyist side of things, which, you know, that there are those cosmetic grade ingredients. A soap that lends itself to shelf life probably doesn't need all that exotic stuff in it. It needs to be fairly simple. It needs to be ultimately long lasting. And I think the current artisan space will have to adjust to that if they want to go over to that. It'll be a bit of an adjustment for sure. But I think there are some people that could do it. Maybe not now, but as businesses on average start to grow, you'll see the want to kind of push out and do that. I'm surprised we've not seen some of the larger scale razor makers do it, to be honest, like a Rockwell or even Supply.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I reckon they could consider doing. This is a really big passion of mine. It's the idea of how to grow this thing.
Absolutely.
I think it will start at the top, the companies that have the ability to make more volume.
Yeah.
And then it will then become possible, because I don't think many people have really been able to do it thus far. And then you'll eventually see, you know, I remember seeing that company 4 years ago, and now they're in target or something. I hope so. That would be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like Rockwell or Supply at a Walmart or Target. The fact that they're better poised, I think, most companies I can think of top of my head, to scale to that level.
I joked about it, you know, doing the West Coast shaving videos. So, like, when I first was doing the videos, I did a video on Cremo. And it is the most popular video on the Daily Shave series.
Wow.
I know it's in the five figures. I know it's in the 10,000s in terms of views. But they don't carry it anymore because West Coast Shaving doesn't carry Cremo anymore, because Cremo is also, you can buy it at Target and Walmart.
Yeah.
And their contracts grew so fast that they basically said, oh yeah, if you want to carry us, you have to put in an order of like 10,000, like,
damn.
Yeah. The minimum buy, right.
Something stupid, you know, and whatnot. And right. Yeah. Like, you know, I think them, another person I've seen in like big box stores is Pacific Shaving.
Yeah.
That's also one based too. Out of California. I've seen them in Target as well.
Mm-hmm. Good products.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. And agreed. I'm sure that, you know, it's probably a similar situation. So, you know, again, it's just going to be a matter of volume, ease, looks to a certain degree, you know, as well. But yeah, I think, you know, you're definitely right. It's probably a mixture of a little bit of everything, plus that X factor of, you know, what's it going to take? Is it going to take something like you said, a Supply, a Rockwell, you know, doing a quote unquote budget, affordable, easily mass produced, you know, mass market item, for it to take off?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think encouraging the everyday person to use one blade, where you could physically have to handle the blade and put it in a razor, is actually a bit intimidating.
Absolutely.
We'd need to figure a way to bridge that, because I remember when I first tried to encourage my wife to use a safety razor, she's, no, that has a dangerous blade in it. But then I was like, don't you realize your razor uses four dangerous blades? You just don't need to touch them. That's the difference here. Like, once it's in the razor, you don't really need to worry about it. And I think that's going to be something, especially on the razor side, that we will have to eventually think about how to do the marketing for that. But I think Supply and companies like Supply and Rockwell have already started doing that already.
Yeah.
And Supply have done tremendously well over the past couple of years.
Yep. Shark Tank appearance.
A lot of it is systemizing, like to a degree, like, they're not just selling a razor, they're selling you a solution to a problem. Ultimately, I think that's how we do it. Do you understand what I mean? Like, they're not just selling you a razor, they're selling you a solution to the poor shaves you're having.
Yep.
Yep.
And I think that's like how it will work.
Especially with, you know, them, you know, you're right. Some people are afraid of, you know, like, handling the blade. So, you know, doing an injector style, modern injector.
Exactly.
It's, you know, they're just like, look how cool this is. You know, injector blades are more expensive than, you know, double-edged blades, but they're still cheaper than cartridges.
They last longer, though.
Yeah, they're cheaper than cartridges. And then I don't know if you guys have seen the advertisements. At least last year, I was seeing something just like, here, you know, free blades. You know, with Supply, right? Like,
oh yeah.
You could do something.
Which makes sense, though, because if they're buying, they're probably buying those blades in extreme bulk to make it worth it. And then they're selling you a razor that they probably make a decent markup on because of where they're getting it made. And then they're making a large markup on the razor. They're making X amount of profits. That blades is basically a, what's the word? It's basically to make people think they're getting something extra or for free.
It's an
extra incentive. Yeah.
It's an incentive. It's, you know, a little, It's the little advertisement. It's the, you know, buy one,
freebie,
get one.
But it's not a freebie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that will sell people.
For sure. Kind of adding on to Jack, what you said, and Gerard, I think like the piece of the puzzle. So, and Gerard mentioned this way back, I think when we first started recording, but a celebrity face, whether it's like for, we're talking about supply, right? That would do just fine. But some sort of celebrity face attached to traditional shaving where they are someone who's benefit. So I'm thinking like George Foreman grill, not quite in that way, because like you said, Jack, you want to lead with the problem it's solving, and you can either go the environmental route, right? That's one way that people that have, right? That's one way that definitely has gained traction, especially I think amongst women. And then I think the whole thing's irritation. Like I think every single person we've talked about how they got into wet shaving is like, my face is getting messed up by how I'm shaving. And part of it is learning proper technique. Other times, just the four blades, the five blades, the vibrating heated six blades, whatever it is now, is just, you know, it's not for most people's faces. So like, I think that's, you know, what you mentioned, that like start with the lead with the problem that you're fixing, and if you like slap on a celebrity face who's there, whether for educational or just like promotion, just get noticed. Like, oh, I didn't know they still made these.
John, I was gonna say, or sorry, Jack, I was gonna say that, you know, I don't know if you know, but Rick from Pawn Stars has a double-edged razor.
Yeah,
and he was a celebrity face for all bald men. And
how dare
you forget him in this whole ordeal, you know. You know, shout out to Chumley and the gang over there and stuff like that. But I mean, I still say that, right? I would also add on, you saw this recently with Kylie Jenner and Champion sportswear hoodies.
Yeah.
Or hoodie, right? Like Champion was literally Kmart brand. It was the generic cotton hoodie that you would buy at Kmart. She wears it, and now it's stupid, like priced streetwear. They're charging like $100 for these hoodies. And I just couldn't. It's so wild. But maybe something like that has to happen.
Yeah.
Who do you do it with, though?
For the mass market.
It depends who you're trying to target, right? Because that's a whole different conversation. Because
Nick Offerman.
Oh, you don't want to go with someone. You don't want to go with someone too old.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to get like a younger target market as well. Because remember, people start shaving at like 17, 18 in theory. So you're trying to appeal to that market. For me, it would be someone in sports.
I was thinking the same thing, especially if it's like a Gillette leading it. They have the connections, right? Maybe a recently retired sports star, because in the grand scheme of things, that's not too old, and someone who might actually care, like, you know, so who cares about skincare? Men who are, you know, not college age guys, but maybe more in your 30s, 40s, and upwards.
But then the argument could be led with, maybe you should care if you're in college.
Yeah, start early kind of thing.
I will say it now. Patrick Mahomes.
Yes, okay? That's who I was thinking. Well done. Right? We've done already.
Okay. Mm. So.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's like, we're doing their work for them. Okay. And any razor maker, anyone, go be the sponsor for Patrick Mahomes. And go make your money and
give him your razor, get a pack of DE blades or injector, whatever blades are
supply. Go do it. Go do some work, and just kick it off, you know, from there. And on the opposite end, screw it, give it to Tom Brady, you know, as well, because you know that's the Super Bowl this year.
Look what he did with Uggs,
you know,
Uggs for men.
It's crazy, isn't it? Like how these things work. But then again, like if you think about that logically, that's kind of what these artisans are doing now, but just to a much smaller scale, right?
Yeah.
Like they're giving it to people that have, you know, so to speak, clout within the community. Like giving Paul H a razor, that's basically what you're doing, but just within a hobbyist community.
Sure. Influencer
kind of
stuff. The upscale
then would be, yeah. So the upscale, I think, then would be giving it to much larger influencers outside of the wet shaving community. You can do that by the sustainability community. Kind of like the male grooming community.
Men's skincare
grooming. Like Alpha M, people like that. Did you see, remember OneBlade? Do you remember the pivoting OneBlade?
Yep.
They did it with Alpha M for a while.
Oh, they did.
That would, I think, be the companies in this industry. Because I don't know if it's targeted advertising on social media. And Shark Tank couldn't have hurt, of course. But
yeah.
I think that's mostly what it was. It's a really interesting conversation to have. I hope it happens someday.
I hope so, too. I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. Jack, it's been such a pleasure just hearing kind of, you know, your experience at Carve, content creation, and more. So thank you so much for your time and joining us for today's episode of Lather Talk.
Thank you for having me. And it's a pleasure to be on and chat to you guys for the, you know, hour and a bit we have. I'm happy to come back on kind of whenever you guys ever want me, if you do.
Absolutely. I think a lot of our conversations today really lend themselves to a kind of a roundtable discussion.
For sure.
So I think I'll definitely keep you in the back pocket and see if we can do this maybe surrounding a particular topic. So a lot of great ideas, I think, coming from our conversation with you today. So thank you so much, Jack. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Lather Talk. You can find all the links for Jack and the virtual groom room in the show notes. We hope you enjoyed the podcast and hope to catch you next episode.